and welcome to episode 9 of the Match of the Week podcast, the Place to Be Nation podcast network. I'm Tim, and I'm joined, as always, by Tanner. Tanner, how are we doing?
I'm doing quite well. In the finishing stretch of school right now. Nice. I'm about a month away from I say summer vacation. I'm doing summer classes this year, so just marching on.
very nice. Yeah, I have finished that slog. I'm very happy I have, but now I'm looking for jobs, and that is just as big a slog I'm realizing is school. So yeah, very, very good stuff. This week, you know, I definitely have a big time soft spot in my heart for this match. It's one of my favorite matches of all time. In fact, when we were doing the first two shows, I really contemplated making this my selection for my favorite match that we did on the second week of the show. But I knew we were going to do it at some point, and then when I realized we were coming up on the 25th anniversary of the match, I decided we should do it this week. And so we are recording this on the day, 25 years ago, that that Shinobu Kandori and Akira Hokuto had the greatest women's professional wrestling match of all time at All Japan Wrestling's Dream Slam. And you know, Tanner, I don't know what your personal background is with this match, but what were your thoughts the first time that you saw this thing, and you kind of remember, you know, what it was like compared to any other, you know, wrestling match that you had seen?
Well, the first time I watched this match was probably about 2 years ago. It took me a long time just to watch this match because, like, I think, like a lot of people, Joji is a big blind spot for me. Mm-hmm. So it took a while for me to get around to it. And then I actually watched it again about 2 hours ago before we recorded this. And my thought today watching it, you know, reflects my thought of watching it 2 years ago. And this is one of the best matches to ever take place, like, anywhere in the world. Like, I mean, it's so good with the like, if you know the story and of the match, like, going in there's a unspoken of story. Like, I've read a bunch of pieces on this match just because it's such an interesting match, especially to be happening in, I mean, 93. And it's so different than anything else from that time.
Yeah, so the general background of the show itself is that it was the 25th anniversary of All Japan Women. And for the longest time, there was this rule for All Japan Women wrestlers that they had to have a mandatory retirement at the age of 25. And so during the mid-80s, when there was this huge boom thanks to the Crush Gals and Dump Matsumoto and all these other, you know, great wrestlers, Devil Masami, Jaguar Yokota, that when they retired, quote unquote, from All Japan Wrestling, that they went off and formed their own splinter groups. And over time, in the late 80s and early 90s, some of these other women's groups started to get some notoriety. And it became, you know, saturated to the point where when All Japan Women was trying to figure out what to do in the early 90s, that they got together with a lot of these women's promotions and started doing interpromotional matches. And that led to Dream Rush in November of 1992, and that was the first major interpromotional match between All Japan Women and JWP, with the great tag team match of Toyota and Yamada versus Dynamite Kanzai and Mayumi Ozaki. But then, like, this match, as you talked about, the story going into it was extremely interesting. You know, Hokuto was this woman who had this incredible toughness. She called herself the Dangerous Queen because she felt that she could go up against anybody. And of course, you know, in this interpromotional time, you had Kandori, who had come up and had a few years in her, but had this legit judo background. And so, you know, Hokuto, trying to protect her image, decides to challenge Kandori, and you get this match. But talk a little bit more about what you kind of remember reading on this match, because this is a match that has a lot of lore to it, and it's only grown in the years since this match has happened, just because it was, like you said, one of the most unique matches that has ever taken place, to be frank.
Yeah, so Hokuto, you know, came into the Joji game early, you know, like a lot of people. She was wrestling at like 17, and she had kind of been plagued by these injuries. Like, you know, she broke her neck off a tombstone pile driver in the late 80s, cost her a year of her career. She comes back, she gets met with another injury, and then she comes back. But each time she comes back, she grows like this more, like her reputation goes up, because they're like, oh man, like, you know, she's back. And like, it's, and that's kind of that added to her persona of being the dangerous queen, where she's like, oh, she came back from a broken neck. She continued the match. She broke her neck in. She continued to wrestle the match with a broken neck. She's literally holding. Like she holds her neck for like 10 minutes with one hand and continues to work with one arm with a broken neck. Like it's incredible. And it's one of those things where it just adds to the lore of this match in a way, like, especially once, you know, you get into the match and like some of the things that Kendori throws at her. And then on top of that, Kendori is like probably the closest thing to a shoot fighter that Joji has seen at this point. Like, she's a legit badass. Like, I think she won bronze in the like Judo World Championships for Japan in the 80s. So, I mean, she's legit. Like, she will whoop your ass. So it's like, on one hand, you have Kendori trying to make a name for herself by just beating, you know, the best that, you know, they can throw at her. And you have Hokuto, who lives and thrives off this dangerous queen persona, where she's like, I can take anything and I'll just give it back to you. And that's really the main story of this match, is just, you know, like, everything Kendori throws at Hokuto, Hokuto tries to throw back at Kendori, but even better.
Yeah, and I think that the setting, in addition to this, is that All Japan was basically shifting a lot of what its wrestling style was around this time, and it had to do with Manami Toyota. Now, there was always this idea of a lucha-based style within All Japan Women, like going all the way back to the 80s when Jaguar Yokota, after a tour of CMLL, came back, and she kind of brought this new style with her, where she was flying around, very athletic. But Manami Toyota obviously added to that when she became relevant in the early 1990s. And that was the basis for a lot of wrestlers around this time, was that it was a very fast-paced, breakneck style. It was 100% athletic. And this match is the complete antithesis of that. It is a match that is draped in this, just almost, you know, legitimacy is the best word that I've seen people throw around in the numerous reviews I've read this match, and that I can think of when people think of, like, the first thing is that this strove to be like a legitimate fight in the best sense of the word. And I think that the opening of this match shows that this is going to be no ordinary, you know, Joshi style match. Like, the first thing that happens in this match is Hokuto goes right up to Kendori after they talk shit to each other and punches her in the face.
Yeah.
And knocks her out almost. And then gets on the microphone and talks shit. And it's like, if this is the toughest that I got, she's got no chance, right? And then, like you talked about, then Kendori is like, yeah, that was a lucky shot. And she proceeds to just maul Hokuto for the next 5 minutes. And when that happens, when that's what you base the match around, it basically puts it in this atmosphere. Like, there's a hushed atmosphere, and then all of a sudden you hear the crowd just get right after Hokuto, like really egg her on, because like you talked about, she had built this up, this reputation of being able to come back from anything because of her injury history. And it's just an incredible, incredible start to this thing, in a way that I don't think I've ever really seen another wrestling match duplicate. And it's been 25 years since this match has happened.
No, absolutely. It's so Kendori throws on this armbar very early on in the match on Hokuto that I I don't know if anything happened to Okudo's arm, but if it didn't, holy shit, how? Because, I mean, literally, they, after Kandori's forced to let go of the hold, they like zoom in on Okudo's arm, and it's like behind her back. Her shoulder literally looks like out of socket, and it very likely was. And like her wrist is all fucked up. I mean, it's insane of just like the, I don't even know the ferociousness that like they went at each other with, like just from the word go. And this match goes 30 minutes or something, like
just over 30 minutes. Right.
Yeah. And I mean, and they never let up. Like, I mean, there's a few times where I think they have to stop just because if they don't, they're going to die because they're insane. It's one of those things that when it was happening, it, like you said with the crowd. So the crowd has like this hushed tone over it. It's like, oh my, like they don't really know what's happening. But then the crowd like is super hot, and it's not even that the crowd is like disliking the match. It's just like, wow, we've never seen anything like this, much less from a Joji promotion. You know, again in 1993. So it's kind of insane just to watch that happen with the perspective of, you know, having 25 years on the match now, and still nothing has happened quite like it. And nothing really happened before. Like, this match is truly a one of a kind match that holds a special place in my heart. Like, I absolutely just loved the whole thing.
Yeah. And you know, there had been bloody brawls like during All Japan Women's heyday. Right. I mean, obviously Dump Matsumoto, Bull Nakano, their fights with the Crush gals, like there's blood all over the place and brawling all over the place. But this is like, I think there's like this inherent sense of danger.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's this kind of idea, and there's, you know, you talked about the beginning, but the biggest thing, obviously, I think people take away from this match, and I remember the first time I watched this. So I'm trying to place this. It was definitely back in like the early days that wrestling footage made it onto the internet in like peer-to-peer sharing, like maybe Napster / Kazaa / LimeWire, like really, really early on.
Yeah.
Like this is how I first came across this match. And I can't remember exactly when it was, but I remember the first time I saw it, that the blood obviously is a huge component of this match.
Yeah.
So, obviously, the story is that Wally Yamaguchi, who people might remember as Yamaguchi-san with Kai and Tai and the WWF in the mid-90s, is the second referee on the outside of this match. And a lot of that has to do with the booking of the match and how they wanted to make sure that nothing got too out of control concerning what led to it. But he was really there because Kandori and Okudo had never bladed really before.
Yeah.
And so he had, you know, an experience with that. And after that tombstone pile driver on the table, which has the great visual shot due to Kandori's knee hitting the table so hard, it looks like Hokuto's head
left a crater in the table.
Dent in the table.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Exactly. There's also this great production shot where the camera turns to it, and the in-house video, you hear the reaction from the crowd. Like, that's how much it hit.
Yeah.
And then after the refs and the doctor go over to check on her, Okudo emerges just blood streaming down her face. Yamaguchi essentially blades her to the point where she doesn't stop bleeding for almost an hour after this. And we'll get to that after. But it's just this visual, insane reaction to that spot. And that's when you hear those chants we talked about, really getting the crowd at Yokohama Arena into the match. But at the same time, you know, Okudo, who because of her injuries is not as go as most, but she can still go. I mean, she's still one of the best wrestlers in the history of women's wrestling and wrestling in general. But she understood that with a match like Kandori that she was going to have, that it was really imperative that they kind of really, you know, drew out the first 15 minutes of this match, really made it dramatic, not really made it about a go style match, but they turned it into this really hateful trading shots, really just kind of fighting for submissions. Kandori really lays it in. Like, I mean, she is absolutely just crushing Hokuto with her strikes, trying to dismantle that arm with every arm submission she can think of in these first 15 minutes. Hokuto's selling her ass off. And the first pinfall attempt in this match hasn't come until about 18 minutes in. That's insane. Yeah. Like, they don't even work. Like, that's why I really – like, when I talk about match layout and why I'm not a huge fan of, you know, multiple pinfalls at the end of the match is because I think – I just think about a match like this, and I think about how this is laid out and how freaking 15 minutes in, 18 minutes in, that's the first pinfall attempt. Like, that's how much they go after each other. And from then on, it just turns into this really dramatic, really just incredibly hate-fueled stretch that just builds and builds and builds in a way that I've seen very few matches ever really build up.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, like, the match itself, like, just looking at it from a move perspective, I guess, it's not a terribly difficult formula. I mean, there's power bombs, there's pile drivers, and there's like closed fist punches, and that's about 95% of the offense in this match outside of those submissions. Speaking of the submissions, there's one spot quite later on in the match with this, like, it's like a giant swing, but it's a sleeper hold, and it's one of the most insane things I've ever seen in the match, because usually when you do something like that, it you know, you can tell that, like, okay, that looks fake. Here, though, it looks like I'm choking her out and I'm swinging around to show my strength, and it's badass. And it was totally badass because it, you're like, oh my God. Like, it's one of the few times I've ever seen, like, a swinging sleeper, which I don't see many times anyways, but it actually looked legit and not, like, super, super fake. And so that was really nice. And then, again, like, I'm a sucker for shoot style stuff. And, like, I love power bombs. I love pile drivers. So, obviously, this match was just, like, all of the stuff I like in one. And the punches and strikes in this match are just, I mean, absolutely insane. I mean, there was, I mean, I'm sure they went into it knowing, but there was some legit shots thrown in this match. Like, the forearm strikes. Yeah. I mean, like, the punches, like, I can't stress enough, this isn't like a wrestling punch, like, oh, this is a, you know, a Jerry Lawler or a Necro Butcher punch that just looks incredible. This is like, I'm going to punch you in the face, I hope you're okay with it, boom. And, you know, like, it's insane. It's utterly insane.
Yeah, the one thing I think was funny about this was when I was watching this the first few times, I was like, man, those forearm shots are just ridiculous. And people who, like, knew about the match were like, no, those are punches. They're like legit punching each other. Those are, if not 100% legit, as close to legit as you can possibly get. And yeah, that's, I think, what just the incredible amount of violence, how just in the middle of this style that had kind of become romanticized because of its fluidity and its just general jaw-dropping athleticism, just they throw this incredibly viscerally violent match in the middle of all of this. And I feel that now, you know, looking back on it, we're never going to see a match like this, I don't think, ever again. Just the way that that wrestling has evolved, you're not going to see something this violent. You're not going to see something even as hate-filled as think about the quote-unquote most hate-filled feud in wrestling today that you can think of. And it's not even there. If there's blood, it's going to be basically a trickle. And it's just like, and that adds to this match. It's a lot like the great lucha brawls. Like, if you've seen any of those great, you know, like MS1, you know, Sangre Chicana or Blue Panther and Viano 5, or some of these other just great lucha brawls that had blood as a main element to them. You're seeing that not only as a major, you know, focus here, but a lot of that has to do with the story coming into the match. It's like Hokuto, whose entire being is based on her toughness. Can she brave through this? And like that, I can't believe how much that adds to the story of this match, and how in retrospect even though it was a 100% accident, the fact it happened only made the match better, which is just a crazy thing.
Yeah, it's one of those things where there are a few, I don't even want to call them botches per se, but there's a few mishaps. Yes, no, there are. Yeah.
Without a doubt.
Okay, they're definitely botches, but they add to the match. Like, it's one of those things just because, like, nobody's ever, like, if you're watching, I guess, an MMA fight, you're not going to, like, be like, oh, this ruined the fight for me because this one guy, you know, messed up this, you know, rolling armbar attempt or whatever. I don't know MMA that well, but it's one of those things. That's not going to mess up the fight for you. They can still have a great fight. It just adds to the real grittiness of the fight. And that's kind of what it does here. I hate to compare the two matches because they're totally different in every regard besides the botches adding to the match. Kind of like Punk versus Cena for Money in the Bank. I know it's a weird comparison to make, but like the botches actively added to that match, just like they actively added to this match. And it adds a whole other element of realness of being able to just take out the, everything you know about pro wrestling, like, oh, it's fake, whatever, and take that out for a second and be like, oh, okay, well, she messed that up. So, but did she did totally, something totally else. And it just adds this element of greediness, of realness. It really adds to it, especially with the whole, like, this is an interpromotional match. You know, they even went as far as the two separate locker rooms, which I think is an incredible touch that honestly pro wrestling misses nowadays. I think that would add a lot to a lot of things, but it just adds to it. And I think watching this match for the first time, you really don't even notice the botches. Like, it wasn't until and this is the second time I've ever seen this match. It wasn't until this time I was like, oh, well, that was kind of a mess up, but wow. Like, you don't even notice it. Like, I don't know. It's just an incredible piece of work from these two.
Yeah. Yeah. These felt like struggles when they quote unquote botched something. And even then it was kind of one of those things where it's like the blood loss and just the way that the match had started out. That's kind of the thing. It's like the atmosphere around this match is the one thing that 100% nobody can duplicate. And they created that. That was something that they knew how to create from the get-go. The first 5 minutes of this match are done in a completely unique way, and it has really added over time to really make you think about, like, what does a great wrestling match have to do in order to have a legacy? How long lasting does it have to be? And the first 5 minutes of this match is probably the best opening to any match ever. The only match I can think of that might be close to this from an opening standpoint is the opening to the June 9, 1995 All Japan Tag.
Yeah.
Where famously, after Misawa had his orbital bone broken, you know, Kawada, in the midst of just a regular running the rope segment at the beginning of the match, kicks him in the face off the apron. Like, that sets an immediate tone.
Yeah.
And says, he knows he's hurt. He doesn't care what it takes. He wants him. He wants his pin on Misawa. Right.
Yeah.
And that sets the tone for the next 40 minutes. This really sets it in a way that really can't be duplicated. And the end, the finish of this match too. So, you know, Hokuto really goes into this great stretch where she decides to start throwing everything she can.
Yeah.
Because she feels like there's nothing left that she can do. And so she's able to send Kandori to the floor, hits this great just somersault plancha off the top rope, and then crazily hits a missile drop kick off the top rope to the floor, which is something that you would normally see like a Manami Toyota do, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then she goes in the ring, she hits the Northern Lights bomb, and Kandori barely escapes. And that's like this big, like, gasping moment, right? Mm-hmm. Because that's the move Hokuto has. And if she can't finish Kandori with that after everything she's been through, how the hell is she going to beat her, right?
Exactly.
And so she goes for it again. Kandori reverses it into her own, which when I first saw that, I was like, oh, crap. and Hokuto is able to kick out, right? And then they go into the famous Rocky II finish where they both just haul off on each other. They both connect with the punch, but it's Hokuto who, just like the first punch of the match, is able to keep Kandori long enough to the mat where she can crawl over. And just like, it's like, I think I remember in the Death Valley Driver 100, I can't remember if it was Schneider or Dean Rasmussen who wrote it, but they talked about the finish of the match was like a zombie kind of coming, like rising from the dead and crawling over just enough to get a pin. Like that visual of just like Hokuto barely having enough like energy to even crawl to you know, get on top of Kandori for the pin.
Yeah.
What just an incredible finish. And one of those things that I think, again, really adds to the match in a way that few other matches can duplicate, if that.
Oh, absolutely. Like, especially towards the end of the match, you can tell that both of these women are obviously exhausted. But it's not the case of, oh, they're gassed, you know, whatever. It's just like, there's been so much emotion in this match. There's been so much, especially on Hokuto's part, so much blood loss. I mean, Kandori got busted open too, but not near to the extent, or bladed, not near to the extent of what Hokuto did. And like, there's just this pure feeling of exhaustion that really, like you said, adds to the finish of the, like this almost zombie-like crawl to win. And then it's kind of like funny too, because Hokuto's music's like this fairly upbeat tune. So as soon as the match ends, like that hits for like 10 seconds and they're like, oh, maybe we shouldn't play that right now, because obviously both of these women are just like not in the best shape. So they like immediately cut it off. Like they bring out the ice packs and it just adds a whole, like, you really don't feel like there's a winner in the match. Like obviously Hokuto wins, but it feels like both of these women just gave everything they had. And it's like, yes, Hokuto got the pinfall, but who's worse off, you know, in this situation.
Right. And the post match is great too. You talk about how she has, you know, her theme playing, which kind of seems really odd to hear after the match that you just saw, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah, the thing that, you know, brought up the whole bleeding part earlier. So afterwards, you know, they're, you know, pouring her, you know, water on the face and trying to mop her down and all that stuff. And then she goes to the back to do her post match interview. And during that interview where she talks about like Hokuto, you know, Kandori was strong, but I showed, you know, why I'm the dangerous queen, the blood still flows.
Like, yeah.
45 minutes after the fact.
Yeah. And it's just not like it's just sweat blood. It's like she's actively still bleeding.
She's still bleeding. Which is just insane. Like I just really cannot get over just that
how
visual.
Much blood.
Yeah. And it really, really adds to the match in a way that even the post match, just the whole aura about this is just, it can't really be contained. Before we wrap this up, I was thinking about this right before we recorded, and I want to get your thoughts on it.
Okay.
So I don't think it's really too much of a coincidence that it's been essentially a generation, and the way that pro wrestling has evolved from a viewing standpoint on the internet with YouTube and all these other resources that are available, that around this time, we're at this kind of peak for United States-based women's wrestling. And I don't think it's any secret that a lot of the women's wrestling today is based off of what these women were watching from time frames like this in Japan, and the style that has kind of evolved, even though it's not there yet, it is still somewhat close. Like, I would venture that as much as, you know, All Japan matches has been fetishized from the 90s, that whole run, and has kind of evolved into this way, that this particular match, I think, has had more of an impact on the careers of women's wrestling than maybe any other match in history relative to it. What are your kind of thoughts on the legacy of this match? Because I think from a just an actual match itself, it's without a doubt one of the universally praised best matches of all time. Yeah. But like the legacy of it just seems like there are women today who would probably not be wrestling because of this match, like without watching this match. Like I feel that its legacy is that entrenched in the fact that we have women's wrestling entering its peak today.
I would absolutely agree with that. I mean, you just look at some of the stuff we've gotten on TV over the past 3 years since the whole women's revolution thing in WWE. Like some of that stuff has been, you know, cutting edge for women's wrestling on television, you know, in especially in the United States. Like if you look at the whole, well, obviously you have the Sasha Banks, you know, NXT title run, which is, you know, a masterpiece on its own. But then you come in and, you know, you have like, you know, the women's Hell in a Cell match between Banks and Charlotte, and that Falls Count Anywhere between Banks and Charlotte. And really, like, I feel like in about a decade, we're going to have women looking onto that as their inspiration to, you know, as their way, like, oh, yeah, you know, we can main event where, you know, we're just as good or a lot of times even better than the guys. And it's, I think those matches wouldn't have had the impact that they did had not for the groundwork being laid by the Kandori and Hokuto match. And that's not even taking away from, you know, Charlotte or Banks or Bayley or Becky or any women's independent wrestler that have, you know, has done this stuff. And it's one of those things that's just adding to the legacy. And eventually, you know, I think we will hit this point where Joji becomes kind of a hotbed in Japan again. And I think the women's wrestling scene in the UK right now is really strong, especially with promotions like Eve running and, you know, or like Satomura working Fight Club Pro and like beating big names. She wrestled Pete
Dunne last night. Like that's insane.
Yeah, know? Like she wrestled Pete Dunne last night, and like she, you know, she won their title. And
work King of Trios, right? Chikara has brought a lot of those. You know, exactly.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where I think the legacy is only going to continue to improve. But I definitely think this, if not the most, this match to me kind of seems like, you know, when you ask a wrestler who their favorite wrestler is, and 8 times out of 10, they're going to say Eddie Guerrero. I feel like if you ask wrestlers that are in the know what their favorite match is, I would venture to say over half of them says this match.
Yeah. I brought it up just because I've definitely seen social media postings, not necessarily maybe of this match, but definitely of Hokuto. Like, mm-hmm. I've definitely seen Sasha Banks taking photos of Hokuto matches, and I've heard people kind of say Hokuto over the years, and you know, obviously the way that WWE and the Performance Center trains up their wrestlers, it's not just WWE matches they're watching. They have basically whatever they want on tape down there to watch. So, I don't see how anybody who, especially now that it's been a quarter of a century and we are in this boom period, I think this period all, you know, from 92 to basically 95 when Joshi wrestling was at its peak in a lot of ways stylistically. I think it's kind of difficult to not see a correlation there. And I just wanted to definitely bring that up because the fact that Hokuto's is held in such high regard still to this day. And Kandori too, like Kandori has become a renaissance type wrestler in certain aspects. A lot of people are going back to watch her matches outside of this and are realizing just how great a wrestler she was. But just kind of the legacy of this match and how it got so many eyes on a style of wrestling that maybe had not been seen too much before. I think its enduring legacy is going to continue, to be perfectly honest with you.
Yeah.
And that's pretty incredible.
And not to mention that Kandori's still showing how much of a badass she is. She was taking MMA fights like 3 months ago, for Ryzen. And she, like, she's been trying to fight Gabby Garcia for a year and a half now. It's utterly insane, like, the legacy of Kandori, and like Kandori's 53, like
yeah,
that like, what a time to be like, you know what? I think MMA is the career path for me, and I want to continue to fight. Obviously, she had, you know, done some mixed martial arts stuff in the mid-90s, but she, I don't know. Like, it's insane. Like, watch Kandori, watch Hokuto, because I think both of them are masters in their crafts, and they're two very different wrestlers. And I think people looking to get into Joji or looking for tape study can learn a ton from both of them.
Yeah. You'll learn pacing. You'll learn how to establish a match from the start.
Mm-hmm. Emotion. I mean, psychology. Emotion,
selling. It's just all here. Yeah. Every single – it is truly one of the greatest pieces of professional wrestling ever. And, yeah, we went a little bit longer than we normally do. Not by much, but we tried to go a half hour on this. But this is a match that I think is kind of difficult to confine into 30 minutes. But – man, I just, if you haven't seen, obviously the link will be attached, considering who our listening audience is. If you haven't watched this match, I'd be kind of surprised, but, man, it's still incredible to watch today. And I hope you guys watch it. And what's going to be, I think, a busy week for everybody this week as they get prepared for WrestleMania on Sunday. But, man, it's incredible. Like, there's business, you know, the WrestleMania card has major women's singles matches on it, right? Yeah. It's got two big singles matches on it. And they're going to be very good matches, right? But, man, like, it's going to be difficult for me, having just watched this match again, to kind of look at that match and be like, yeah, it's good, but, you know, there's this.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be tough to top that.
No, absolutely. And in any regard, like, there's not been many matches, you know, men or women, that have topped this match in the last 25 years.
No, there's you can't really duplicate it. And I also think, and you know, the final thought for me on this is that I think it goes into 100% that the thing that really separates a legendary match from a great match is that emotional investment.
Mm-hmm.
And the emotion that is garnered in this match, the pure visceral reaction from people in this match, man, it's singular. And when you get that in a professional wrestling match, like what happened with Johnny Gargano and Andrade Almas, that just that singular atmosphere.
That's what makes matches remembered. Like, a lot of people can go out and have a four-star match, but then, like, it takes truly special performances and truly special wrestlers for a match to be remembered 5, 10, 15, 20, 25 years later.
Right.
And this is without a doubt one of them, especially in an era that's so spoiled with good wrestling. This era and the mid 90s, like, for this match to be remembered this match happened 2.5 years before I was born. And it's so great to see, like, something like, in a way similar to movies and music, a truly legendary piece of wrestling can be remembered forever.
1993 is thought by many to be the most loaded pro wrestling year across the world in history, because what happened in Japan, what happened in Mexico, you know, WCW at the time. And this match is still a standout 25 years later. So that really does speak to the enduring legacy of this match. So, yeah, we went over, but it was worth it. And
it was worth it.
We hope you guys enjoyed it. It's a match that will be on the link for this podcast. If you haven't watched it in a while, if you've yet to watch it and want to know what all the fuss is about, please watch it. It's definitely worth, you know, 40 minutes of your time. And in a match where in an era where people are arguing about how matches shouldn't go 30 minutes, this one deserved to go 30 minutes. End of story.
Absolutely. So, absolutely.
Tanner, where can people find you on the interwebs?
You can find me on Twitter at Tanner1495, and I also co-host another podcast with some of my buds, and you can follow that at AYCH Podcast. It's on iTunes, Google Play, Overcast, all the normal places you can find podcasts is where you can find that, so go give that a listen.
Cool, and you can find me at Mr. Tim Livingston on Twitter, and also follow at PPW Petaluma. We're a month away from our show on May 4th. And if you're in the Bay Area, some pretty big, you know, Bay Area wrestling stuff coming out this summer and later this spring. And so we're happy to be a part of it in some small way. And we hope you guys will come out to Petaluma if you're in the Bay Area to watch some professional wrestling. So, Tanner, a great one. Enjoy the WrestleMania on Sunday. And we'll see you next week.
All righty. Let's do it.